created with Translated.com.
Feels like we've been talking about it for years. Have we gotten any closer to fixing it? Expectations keep climbing, workloads aren't getting any lighter, and the pressure feels relentless. Now, a powerful force is reshaping how we work, AI. For some, it's a relief, a way to ease the grind. For others, it breeds anxiety. So on today's episode, we ask the question, is AI turning down the heat on burnout or turning it up? I'm Eric Glass, and this is Piece of Work, a Dayforest podcast. Let's rewind for a second. AI was supposed to make work easier, and in some ways it has. It's like having a helpful assistant, one that does all the tedious stuff, finds whatever we're searching for, and makes us look good to our boss. But here's the catch. AI might promise to make us more productive, but its impact on our work life and even company performance is more of a mixed bag. An MIT study from this past August paints a sobering picture. 95% of enterprise AI pilots are failing to deliver measurable financial results. And only a small fraction, just 5%, are driving rapid growth. The culprit? Not faulty AI, but what MIT calls a learning gap. In other words, companies are still figuring out how to deploy AI in ways that truly work for their people. So how do we square that with all these stories about AI making us more productive? An Upwork study found AI did boost worker productivity by an impressive 40%, but heavy AI users were 88% more likely to experience burnout and twice as likely to quit. Why? Because AI raised their bosses' expectations, it expanded their workloads, and it clawed back the human connection that so many employees value. This creates a whole new challenge for employers. Now they have to balance AI's upside with the real risk of losing or burning out their people. And that's a tightrope many leaders are just now learning how to walk. To learn more, I'm joined by Andy Newman, founder and CEO of Creative Taxi. Andy's here to help us understand how people are experiencing burnout today, what companies can do about it, and how all of us can thrive as passionate professionals. So before we dive into burnout, can you just set the stage and tell me a little bit about your career journey so far?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for having me. Great to be here. And I would say I'm a creative strategist. I've filled just about every role going back to my college days, whether it's filmmaking or writing or doing the creative operations and putting together a plan to make a creative project happen. And, you know, through that collection of skills, I just wanted to express my creativity and help small businesses, help artists, help other people that, you know, are purpose-driven in their work, all the hats, and find what you like, find what you don't like. I think that's also kind of through that process how I learned about burnout is by doing maybe some of the stuff you don't like a little bit too much.
Yeah, so that's exactly where I wanted to go next. So how did it first, how did burnout first show up for you?
The number one thing that stood out to me, it was scary too. It was, I would say, skill regression. I, you know, kind of my core skill that I considered, you know, I prided myself on were my writing abilities, how I could construct a story and put together a plan for kind of a content strategy with a small business. And I couldn't do that anymore. I couldn't, you know, string together a sentence, let alone a plan to put together. It was the showing up at my desk and just kind of feeling frozen, not feeling like, you know, my writing skills were there. I just kind of questioned it. And from there, you know, I think the other things start to show up. You know, you just, when you're in that mindset of questioning things, you are constantly tired. The exhaustion just creeps in. You never get to feel rest. It gets you to a place where, you know, ultimately you're inside your own head too much, I think.
Was it for you predominantly a just volume of what you were trying to take on and deliver? Or was it also to a degree situational in terms of, you know, team dynamics or leadership dynamics? How did those kind of components play out?
I think it starts from a place where leaders ask for something that they kind of don't maybe fully know what they're asking for. And that's a common thing. That's what, you know, leaders are wanting to challenge their teams. They want to kind of like I said, you know, create new possibilities, do things that are a little bit above and beyond, and pushing everybody's skills. But then there's also a functional limit to that. And so I think that's what I saw, in, you know, when you're in a work environment where you're having six or seven more or less back-to-back meetings, but then also expected to turn around feedback, by, you know, the end of the day, that's just not really realistic in terms of a mental capacity standpoint, to be able to bring your best all of, to all of those rooms.
So how did you work through what you were experiencing, when you really, you know, got very clear? You know, you mentioned the skill regression and then, you know, some of the just, you know, physical, the tiredness, et cetera. How did you start to work through that, and how did it, you know, start to get better?
Great question. So, you know, I had the support of some really great networks and people who, you know, gave me, I think, some great guiding principles, also challenges at the right time, and support, you know, started showing more vulnerability and what I needed, what wasn't working for me, what was, and asking for the right support or asking for better support and to, how to articulate that, understanding what that meant in terms of boundaries and enforcing those. That did mean leaving, you know, a couple situations. It meant changing my expectations, you know, in ways that honestly have let me, you know, let some of the that kind of like perfectionism go, let's say, where you're expected to just constantly be on a weekly metric cycle. I am a big person about balance. That's like the number one word on my list, because work should support life and family, and that should support the work you do. And I think when you are in a cycle where those two things are connected, you can wake up every day feeling good. And that's a great feeling.
Oh, it's, I love that. And I can see, even just as you talk about it, right? Like the energy and connection that you have to it is really present, which is really, really cool to see. I love that way you were drawn on balance. Actually, similarly, it's a word that I really anchor myself on too. So how do you differentiate, I guess, a little bit in you know, your mind and maybe even your actions between, you know, what you maybe have viewed as balance and a better sort of approach to harmony?
Yeah. So that's I love that question. For me, it was reflecting on what actions leave me feeling energized versus drained. And so once I really took stock of that, and this is also kind of a common career thing that I see some people, self-included, you can get stuck on at different stages, which is you start identifying with the title. You know, you are a creative director, a marketing director, a designer. But what are the skills that you actually like to do? What are the skills that you express that bring you joy, that leave you energized, that you want to share, that you want to teach? Once I started reflecting on those things, I realized that, you know, for me, the number one thing was talking to creative people. The second thing was like advocating for their best interests. And as I like peeled that back, I'm like, I don't need to be a creative director to do that. I can be a creative coach. I can be a consultant. I can be these different things.
Let's talk about AI for a minute. Where do you think AI plays in terms of impacting burnout?
Yeah, I think it has an incredible potential to increase burnout, especially among knowledge workers, among creative workers. The thing that I see with it is that, you know, it can always ask for more. It doesn't get tired. It doesn't have, you know, a battery, so to speak, in that way, in the way that human creativity does. And that's where that reflection, that rest, that, you know, reflecting on the frustration of the day, that's where the creative inventions come from. And I think if AI tools are just kind of listing, okay, here are the next 10 steps, sometimes that gets folks on a hamster wheel of productivity for productivity's sake, rather than actually, you know, filling their cup or filling their needs.
Do you, in just even in your work, do you see it as a tool that can help you either, you know, accelerate so that you can then maybe slow down.
I would say I approach it in a mindset of helping me get unstuck. Something that I'm, an article that I'm writing, or if it's just a thought that I'm having, you know, I can use that as a way to challenge that thought or to ask, like, you know, what am I not considering? And by doing that, that allows me then to get, you know, back to the ideation table, get back to, you know, the conversation at hand. And I think it is a very useful tool in that sense.
It was great speaking with Andy, and I'm grateful for the light he shed on what it's like to experience and recover from burnout. But now I'm interested in knowing more about how we approach this at the organizational level. How do we support people at scale, especially in a growing business? To learn more, I'm joined now by Dr. Kira Shabram, an organizational psychologist and faculty member at the Smeal College of Business at Penn State University. Her work explores how people create meaning in their jobs. And lately, she's been examining what happens when identity, purpose, and technology collide in the workplace. Kira, thank you so much for joining the podcast. Very thrilled to spend some time with you. Maybe just as a place to start, how do you define burnout?
Yeah, happy to. Burnout is actually one of the topics we have studied for a very long time. So the good news is it's not just my definition, it's about 40 years of research. We argue that burnout is a disease of depletion. Resources that are usually available to you are no longer. And specifically, we think it's depletion in one of three categories. It's some sort of combination of those categories. One is exhaustion. You wake up in the morning and it's hard for you to get out of bed. You think, how am I going to get through the day? Inefficacy. Things that used to come easy to you don't anymore. You'll spend 30 minutes trying to draft an email. You're procrastinating all the time. And then third, cynicism. When burnout was initially studied, it was studied with healthcare providers. And so cynicism was very specifically defined as the sense of alienation from your patients. What's the point? We've since expanded that, and it's just a general sense of malaise or alienation. Why am I even doing this? Those are the three symptoms of burnout, and then they fall together in different combinations for different people.
Well, goodness, I did not think I was burned out until I started contemplating that definition. But we'll unpack it further, and maybe I'll reassess here by the end of our chat. Hey, the world is talking about AI, of course, in every facet, in the way that it helps, in the way that it can potentially challenge, in the way that it'll do things we haven't even sort of thought up yet. How does AI shift this experience with burnout?
So we can address that in a couple of ways. Since you asked me for the definition a second ago, we can look at those three buckets, right? Exhaustion. Ideally, AI would reduce our exhaustion by taking all the menial labor that we really don't want to do. We can have a conversation as we keep talking about if it actually is, but that would be the ideal. Inefficacy. Currently, we're probably seeing a bit of a spike because everyone's trying to learn as many different AI software programs as they possibly can, and there's a pretty steep learning curve. So I would argue in the short term, probably not great for inefficacy. In the long term, again, the goal would be for AI to reduce our inefficacy. Cynicism is the tricky one. Cynicism we should have a longer talk about. Is AI taking all the menial tasks so that you can do the more meaningful things, which is how it's often promised? Or is it, in fact, taking the things that give you purpose and making you wonder, will I even have a job in the long term? So again, we can think about it from those three perspectives. There's something called goal setting theory, which looks at what are the most motivating tasks for us. The most motivating tasks for human beings are tasks that are difficult but not impossible. And often you can create those through things like time pressure. If you think about a video game, video games are fantastic at creating difficult but not impossible tasks, so we keep going. So in theory, I understand the sentiment, but if we could, I think we could actually do other things that are difficult but not impossible in our private lives, our children, in our hobbies. We wouldn't need to get those from work.
That makes sense to me. It also makes sense to me that, like, fine line, or maybe it's not a fine line, maybe it's like actually a super wide gap, it never feels that way, between something that feels very hard, you know, but achievable, and that which is impossible. I think when I'm maybe in my own, you know, kind of flavors of burnout or you know, where my energy feels like it's deployed in so many areas, that sort of lens of, is this impossible or, you know, still in the, you know, very hard but achievable. So that's a interesting thing to ponder. So, you know, you kicked off by noting there's an abundance of research here, 40 plus years of research. So it almost seems somewhat foolish to even ask about, you know, sort of emerging best practices in terms of you know, the impact of AI relative to burnout, potentially in ways it could help. But I guess, where are we in that, you know, spectrum, knowing that, you know, gosh, we've probably only been running hard with really having AI super accessible to the masses for what, 2.5 years, maybe 3?
If you don't mind, let me give you a very brief history of how we've been addressing burnout, because I think it answers your questions. We've known about burnout for a very long time. I, as an academic, I'm very good at diagnosing it. We have very good surveys. Employers are really bad at it, and employees are really bad at it. So number one, we didn't really even talk about burnout until the late 2010s. In 2019, the World Health Organization added it to its inventory of diseases. At that time, about 3 out of 4 employees were reporting feeling burnt out most of the time. So it was there, but we weren't really talking about it. And then when employers came around to acknowledging it, and COVID helped with that as well, we're currently at the point where they're only talking about the exhaustion bit. They're equating burnout with exhaustion. And so what they're trying to do about burnout is reducing workloads, which is really fantastic for exhaustion. It can actually make the other two worse. No longer gives you those challenges that you talked about before, and it can make you more cynical. So that's where we're at in the grand scheme of things, that burnout is pervasive. It is a social disease. If you're experiencing it, your coworkers probably are as well. And employers are really bad at detecting it. The way employers are currently trying to diagnose it is in one of 3 ways. They're using surveys, they're using turnover data, which is a lagged indicator, and it is just a proxy. And then probably the most effective one, but really costly one, is manager check-ins. Your manager actually checking in with you and monitoring you. That's how we're doing it. And so the question is, what can AI do with those things? Currently, companies that are using AI are primarily using it for diagnostic purposes. So it is quite good at diagnosing that, either through sentiment analysis or through just workload. When are you working? Hey, there's something going on. And we're also seeing AI being used in customized plans once you are burnt out. Hey, this seems to be driven by exhaustion. Let's give them time off at this point in time when they're usually working. What I would love to see AI being used more for, and I think it can be, is prevention in the first place. That really all the research on burnout shows that once you've fallen off that burnout cliff, and it's really a steep cliff, it's very hard to pull yourself back up from it, it's already too late. So I think there's a lot of promise out there using AI to look at which factors around the workplace here are driving burnout. Is it scheduling? Is it emotional labor? I'd love to see more of that. We're seeing more at the back end. Someone's already burned out. I'm detecting it and I'm trying to address it.
And so I believe you said in terms of kind of best approaches from the employer perspective, I think you said really it comes down to that, the one-on-one, right? The manager interaction ideally being the best indicator. I don't know that you went so far as to say like mitigator, but that certainly is the best indicator. Do you see a place where AI is already doing a better job of being a tool that managers are using to you know, better work with their employees in that experience, or is there, you know, the path to really kind of ramp that, you know, really, really significantly?
I think there's a lot of promise there because, again, managers are not that great at the diagnostic bit. So having the AI help with the diagnostics can be really helpful. If I can give you an analogy from the medical practices where AI is being used a lot right now for diagnosis, right? So let's say cancer screening. We find that people in those professions tend to use AI in one of 2 ways. They either let the AI screen the image first, then point them to areas, and then they verify, or they do it themselves first, and then the AI is used to verify their hunch. We find that the latter category is much better. That if you are still thinking about it, you're puzzling through it, but then you use AI in essence as a collaborator to either verify or push back on you, you're still critically thinking, you did the step first, and then you used AI as a tool. And so I think we could use that as an analogy for burnout detection. I think a manager's primary role is really to sustain their employees. Can they continue to perform while not sacrificing their well-being? And so their mental challenge should be to see how their employees are doing. If they're then using AI as a diagnostic tool to either continue to verify those hunches or push back, I think that would be fantastic.
But when you look at those three kind of core dimensions of burnout, and you noted, you know, one doesn't necessarily trigger the next. It can, you know, manifest in any number of ways. Is it showing up, you know, today, last few years, 5 years, given all the things we've dealt with, pandemic, all these different things, surges in technology, all the rest, is it showing up a little differently now than say it did 10, 20 years ago? Does it have some things that are kind of more unique to the world that we live in, you know, right now, when you think about the kind of core dimensions?
Two answers to that. The overall burnout scores have held surprisingly steady. So like I said, and before the pandemic, we thought about 3 out of 4 employees were experiencing burnout. That went up a little bit during the pandemic to about 78%. And it certainly went up for frontline employees or medical employees. But in general, burnout is a problem. It's a major problem. Now you're asking about the cynicism component specifically. Yeah, cynicism is on the rise. It is on the rise both generationally. So Gen Z are a lot more cynical than prior generations, and it's overall. We've so far only talked about AI in the specific context of burnout. I'm happy to talk about it as more of an existential threat to what I do with the majority of my waking hours, right? That's really where that cynicism bit comes in. If you want to talk about personality factors, the clearest empirical measure of personality that scientists use is called the Big Five. A couple of those Big Five personality dimensions really seem to be predictive of how well you'll do in a world of AI. People who are high in openness to experience, again, people who like or crave novelty, will do well. People who have an internal locus of control, who have low neuroticism, who feel in control in the world, will do well. One surprising thing, before we get into the people who won't do as well, that we're finding is one of the Big Five personality dimensions that we've always attributed to being kind of the best one for the workplace. If you can only measure one, measure this one, is conscientiousness. Are you familiar with the Big Five in those dimensions at all?
I mean, very lightly, but somewhat. This is helpful to have you unpack a bit. Yeah,
so conscientiousness. Do you spell check your documents? Do you show up on time? Are you reliable? Really like the drive for those things. Those people tend to do really well in school. They tend to do really well in the workplace. So for example, we find that people who score high on conscientiousness, about 7% of their grades in school are explained just by that personality dimension. The surprising thing is that there is early evidence, and let me really stress that word early, that people high in conscientiousness do not seem to do as well in adapting into workplaces with AI. And that could be because they knew how things worked before. They had kind of learned the right way to do it for their entire lifetime. And now they're having to rethink all that because AI takes over a lot of those things that what we talked about earlier gives you that excitement of, I did a job well done. I checked off a task. So that kind of gets us into the loser's perspective and the cynicism. Where AI is really threatening is if it undermines the things that you were always good at. If it takes away your sense of identity, but I was the person who did this thing in this organization. If it dehumanizes the workplace, you no longer get to interact with people as much because AI is optimizing your workflow or your time. So all of those things will then compound cynicism. But the meta concern is the cynicism about who is pushing for AI. Because again, it isn't coming from neutral messengers, right? There is an ideal of AI, and then there's who's actually selling AI. And they're not selling it as this will make people have better lives. This will make people be able to have more free time or do more creative tasks. They're selling it as cost saving. They're often selling it as you don't need as many employees. And so I'm not at all surprised that there's cynicism when the messaging really isn't aligned with what could be the best of AI for the most people.
What do you think we need then in terms of leadership adjustments, different kinds of skills? What needs to happen from a leadership perspective to start to make sure both are being served appropriately?
I think at its most abstract, leaders hold one of two paradigms about their workers. And we call that theory X or theory Y. The labels don't really matter. But the question is, do you fundamentally believe that your employees want to work, that they get something out of work, that even if you're not very closely monitoring, they're going to work? Or do you believe that's not the case, that you have to monitor them because nobody wants to work? Right? I think leaders need to ask themselves the question, what do you actually believe? What I can tell you in terms of the evidence, if I can help sway a leader in one or the other direction, is that we have something called the lottery studies, which we've conducted for decades, where we basically ask people what would happen if you won the lottery. And we also look at people who do win the lottery. About 60 to 80%, depending on the study, will continue to work in at least some capacity. I fundamentally believe that work is meaningful. I think that humans get more out of life for work. And it seems like the majority of people feel the same way. Not everybody. Some people, if we can give them universal basic income and they don't have to work again, I think that would be great. But the majority of people want to work. They don't want to work to the extent that we're currently forcing them. In the 1930s, John Maynard Keynes predicted that by the 1970s, we would not have to work, but most people would choose to work about 15 hours a week on the creative tasks, on the important, meaningful tasks, because that gave their life purpose. And the rest of the time, they could do whatever they want to do. And so how did we overshoot that so much that we're all working longer hours than ever?
Exactly. And that seems very, very clear. So then let me ask you, if we bring sort of all of these sort of elements we've hit on today, and if you could give one sort of piece of advice to HR organizations, business leaders who are trying to navigate this AI-driven shift?
The first is I would caution them from jumping onto the next thing. There seems to be a lot of fear about losing out on this wave of AI potential. And so people are jumping on all of these different products. And again, the majority of them are failing. So take a deep breath. Take a moment. What are you trying to accomplish? If you're trying to replace your employees with AI, that might actually be true for a lot of workplaces. And so I don't want to say that's not the case. Great. Then you jump on the current bandwagon, you do it. But assuming that you believe fundamentally that you're still going to have employees in your workplace and they're going to have to do well, now we can start to talk about how can we use this tool to make that happen, right? And so we can be a bit more mindful about it. Again, I've given you the four things that drive intrinsic motivation, but you can use AI to look that up. Again, there's different ways of phrasing it, right? But so what are we using to accomplish those things? The last thing paradoxically is, I think if you have bought into AI as a tool that assists people, or you can even call it a collaborator, if you will, the end goal should probably always be how to humanize the workplace more. And paradoxically, since it's technology, but I think if you keep that in mind, am I using these diagnostics to improve well-being and prevent burnout? Am I using these diagnostics to promote a flow state for you or to allow you to focus on more purposeful work? You're really thinking about it as a tool for humanizing and not for dehumanizing, which is really the umbrella for all of the things that could go wrong. Feeling like you're no longer interacting with other people, feeling like your sense of control or mastery has been taken away. So I think having those words at the back of your mind can be really helpful in thinking through the technology.
I enjoyed speaking with both Andy and Kira about burnout. It's such a vital conversation, and I hope you enjoyed their insights as much as I did. There were some big takeaways from our conversation, and I want to leave you with a few final thoughts. First, burnout is evolving. It's no longer just about long hours or doing too much. It's about uncertainty. It's about the emotional toll of not knowing where we stand or whether our work still matters in the age of AI. Second, AI isn't inherently good or bad for burnout. It's a tool. And like any other tool, the impact depends on how we use it. When it's introduced thoughtfully, AI can be a powerful ally, reducing cognitive load, removing friction, and freeing us up for more meaningful work. But when it's rolled out without support or transparency, it can do the opposite. That's where leadership comes in. Because this next chapter of work isn't just about transforming how we work with new technology. It's also about how we unlock potential and bring real meaning back to work. So if you take one thing away from this episode, let it be this. burnout isn't just a personal problem. It's a symptom of our changing relationship with work. And finding the right path forward where technology helps us do the work we're meant to do, well, that should be every leader's top priority. Thank you for listening to Piece of Work. I'm Eric Glass. If you've enjoyed the show, let us know what you think on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The views and opinions expressed on Piece of Work are those of the host and guests and do not reflect the views of Dayforce. Guest appearances do not imply endorsement by Dayforce of any products, services, or organizations mentioned. The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as legal, financial, tax, or other professional advice specific to any individual or organization. Please consult your appropriate advisor for such advice tailored to your specific needs. While this podcast does its best to share accurate and up-to-date information, accuracy and completeness are not guaranteed, and listeners are responsible for how they use the information. The podcast makes no guarantees and accepts no liability for any errors or omissions. By listening, you agree that the podcast, its hosts, and guests are not responsible for any decisions you make or outcomes that follow.